At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The Texas unemployment rate rose slightly in January to start the year at 4%. The Texas Workforce Commission reports the state economy has added about 240,000 jobs over the past year. That includes 16,000 jobs in January. The Texas labor market has had 93 consecutive months of annual growth. America has a habit of following trends that occur in one of its states, Texas. TCU professor Max Krockmal and Rice professor Steven Kleinberg recently talked with KERA's Chris Boyd about how the state's demographic shifts might be a preview of larger changes nationwide.
More than a quarter of the Texas population was under 18 years old, which is extraordinary. Max, what are the implications of that youth bulge from a political standpoint?
You know, that population is overwhelmingly people of color. And as those folks become more politically active and more sort of aware of the issues at stake, it has the potential to move the needle politically. And what we're seeing is that young people are really on the leading edge of several vibrant social movements that are really taking off in the state right now. At the same time, in our last presidential election in Texas, the percentage of the voting age population that actually turned out to vote was less than 50%. So the largest political party in Texas right now is the non-voter. And historically, young people do not vote in large numbers. So it's not clear yet which direction that will go. But in terms of political transformation, I think that the energy we see right now among young people who are engaging in the immigrant rights movement and Black Lives Matter in other struggles for justice has the potential to really upend things.
You want to weigh in on this, Steve?
It's a big part of the epic transition that the United States is in the midst of. Anglos are rapidly aging. There's 76 million babies born between 1946 and 1964. In that baby boom generation, we're going to watch a doubling of the number of people over the age of 65 in the next 25 years, overwhelmingly Anglos, and the young people are disproportionately non-Anglo. So it's a part of the central transformation. And I remind people, no force in the world is going to stop Houston or Texas or America from becoming more African-American, more Latino, more Asian, and less Anglo. So the only question that we have been given is, how do we make this work? And the critical necessity, if we're going to make this work, is major improvements in education and opportunities for kids, many of whom are living in poverty, to be able to compete successfully in the global knowledge economy of the 21st century.
Does the perception of Texas as a state where the Republican Party usually wins statewide offices has for decades now, does that keep both Republicans and Democrats from voting in larger numbers? Republicans feel safe whether or not they go to the polls. Democrats figure they can't win whether or not they go to the polls.
Probably, you know, that there aren't that many alternatives. The districts have been gerrymandered in such a way that very few contested elections take place. And as a result, neither party invests much money in turning out voters or educating voters. And at the individual level, people don't have necessarily as much motivation to go and participate. Even unlikely voters will participate in politics if they're organized to do so. If you reach that voter five times, you educate him or her about the issues, they'll come out and vote on election day, even if they have no history whatsoever of doing that.
Steve, what accounts for the fact that Black and Latino Texans have less per capita income than Asian and white or Anglo Texans?
Well, there's a whole history, of course, of racism in America that has massively redistributed income in different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's also, we've become a nation of immigrants again. And it's a bifurcated immigration stream. One group of immigrants, largely African and Asian, are coming with much higher levels of education than we have ever seen in the history of immigration. Always before, immigrants came at the bottom as Italian peasants or Greek peasants and had two or three generations to go from peddler to plumber to professional. And now one group is coming with far higher levels of education than Anglos. And they are Asians and Africans because they had been banned for the 20th century from coming here and could only get here as professionals of exceptional ability, having skills and demonstrably in short supply in the country. And then you have Houston as the first large city that you get to coming from the South. There used to be an invisible line that went from Corpus Christi through San Antonio to El Paso, where Latinos stayed beneath that line. And then in the 1970s, with the oil boom and then the open, unoccupied buildings that happened and new opportunities that came, or the Anglos stopped growing and the oil bust occurred, you had a large numbers of Latinos coming with very low levels of education in doing the jobs in construction and restaurant work and personal services. That accounts for this growing inequalities predicated now more than ever on education.
That was TCU Professor Max Krockmal and Rice Professor Steve Kleinberg talking with KERA's Chris Boyd. Chris Boyd, you can listen to more of their conversation at KERANews.org. A new exhibition at the Fort Worth Contemporary Arts raises questions about how black artists explore identity and how their work is received in the art world. It features installations, video, and drawings from three artists based in Canada and Chicago. In this week's State of the Arts Conversation, KERA's Ann Bothwell sat down with curator Christopher Blay to discuss the show. It's called Black Borders, Artists of Color, Reframing Culture.
So for the exhibition, you wrote that black artists often see their work labeled as either too black, meaning too insular, or not black enough, somehow ignoring existing social or political conditions.
Yeah, it's like a false binary argument. It suggests that it has to be one or the other. I have a problem with that. So the prism through which the works of African-American artists is usually viewed is that the work is this culturally specific gesture, something that's only meant for one audience. The exhibition hopes to refute that idea because when you consider the spectrum of what's created by artists of color, it's hard to make an argument against their work as being diverse. And I wanted to reinforce that in this exhibition.
And they do that in sometimes very subtle ways. I thought that Erica de Frides' piece seemed very quiet and very personal, this huge crocheted Afghan, and she documents all of the time spent making it. She has a beautiful video installation of a pair of hands that are sort of tenderly grasping for each other and reassuring each other. It's really quiet work.
Yeah.
And personal.
I absolutely agree. And those hands are hers and her mother's. And that sort of personal connection, that intimacy that's conveyed in the video is something that resonates both as a cultural aspect and as representing the thing that creates the object.
Can you tell me about the title, Black Borders? Where does that come from?
It comes from when photographers use enlargers to make images. They sometimes file around the edges of the negative carrier so that it reveals the entire border. So you're aware of where the border is when you're printing the photograph. And it's also a way of suggesting that the image was composed in the camera versus being manipulated later. And that idea stuck with me as a way of acknowledging artists that are very aware of where these lines are in creating their work, whether they push towards content that directly references what's happening in the world, or whether they move within that border and create things that are more internal.
Are the artists directly trying to address what it means to be black? Or do they find that question limiting?
I haven't posed the question to them, but I think it's hard to be black in North America and not be aware of your blackness. That's one of the reasons I selected these artists. They're very aware of what's happening around them, and they choose to make things that embrace that blackness and that make their work a reflection of their identity. But the reason I chose them is they do that in novel ways, and they do that in ways that both embrace what's happening around them and at the same time embrace their connection to the history of contemporary art.
The show's at Fort Worth Contemporary Arts, and that's a part of TCU, so it's a teaching gallery. What is it that you hope art students will learn when they are exploring this work?
If I could use three words, I would say less is more. I like the ideas that the artists are presenting, and I think the subtleness of their gesture creates this really strong idea that you can choose your own path in the work. But the other thing is to embrace who they are and have a personal connection to what they're doing.
Christopher Blay, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
Find images of the work in this exhibition and information about upcoming gallery talks at artandseek.org. At 6:30, this is KERA News.